some of you, that may have kind of spurred your interest a little bit to thinking, wow, I'd like to get involved in karate. Good news, you do not have to fly to Okinawa to do that. In fact, all you have to be able to do is get down the stairs, and Chris will be glad to teach you. But you know, it's like anything really worthwhile. Think about it. Anything really worthwhile takes dedication and discipline. You know, nothing that's really of value in our world comes to us because of just us having to, you know, just showing up, you know. Somebody along the line, you say, well, wait a minute, I got a big fat inheritance, whatever. But somebody was dedicated and disciplined. You know, we're in a series, Marriage Matters, and some of you young people are going, great. Okay, this is all preventative stuff, all right? In fact, I had a young person say to me when they showed me the title, said, I hope this never happens. Because the title today is, of course, you know, when you've married the wrong person. And I said, I hope not too. And I said, that's what this is all about. If we can help people today, and then we can also keep from, you know, some tragic things happening, boy, I am thrilled if that would be the case. So I hope you'll just, you know, sit back, take notes viciously, and we're going to, that's right, and we're going to talk about some things. The great thing about this morning is that this applies whether you say, well, maybe that's why some people didn't come. They think, well, I didn't marry the wrong person. I've got, this is all good. I'm great with this. So, but this is really going to be some help, and you're going to see as we go. You know, God's very, very clear, very, very clear about the kind of person he does and does not want us to marry. But we're all sinners. We make mistakes. We do stupid things. We make dumb decisions. And sometimes we just blatantly disobey what God tells us to do. Maybe you didn't marry within the God's parameters. You've been here maybe the last couple weeks. You say, well, I could see where I went wrong. What do I do if I married the wrong person? Or I married for the wrong reason, perhaps. Should I get a divorce? Should I end it? Just start over fresh? And God says to you, and I'm going to answer this right away, God says no. Stay with the one you married and I'll change you. And if possible, if that person will let me, I'll change them as well. And I'll make your marriage a miracle. And I have seen it happen. I have watched it happen. In 26 years of ministry, I have seen God do some amazing miracles. So you don't have to go out and, you know, trade in. You don't have to upgrade. You don't have to go to spouse 201. You can stay and you can make this work. Now, some of you say, well, you know what? The divorce is over. You know, they've gone on and married somebody else. What do I do now? This is going to be of great help to you, I promise you. The fact is that, you know, when we marry, we've made a vow to God in front of people usually, sometimes a big group of people. And God's plan, we have to understand, is, and God's will, is dynamic, not static. What do I mean by that? God's will is dynamic and not static. In other words, if I make a mistake or I might make a decisions that's stupid, God's not going to say, well, that's it. You wrecked the plan. I mean, I had this all laid out, and, you know, I'm not going to be able to do anything with this. No, God adjusts. So there are times maybe we'd make a decision and God says, well, that's not what I would have had you do. And that's maybe not the plan I would have, or, you know, the choice I would have made, but I'll work with that. Okay? So some of you are in situations say, man, I made a stupid decision. I guess I got to just rewind the tape, dump this. And God says, no, no, no. I'm really glad, aren't you, that we make a mistake and God can still work with that? Aren't you glad that you did? If you make one mistake, God just says, well, that's it. You've wrecked my plan. Yesterday we had a soccer game, and we had two really bad injuries, and that kind of put girls out of the loop. And so one of the girls was saying, I'm sorry. I says, well, yeah, you wrecked my whole plan. I said, I planned my whole strategy around you, and I was kidding her, trying to make her, and she smiled and so forth. But the truth of it is that, you know what, things happen, and you have to make adjustments, even stuff we do to ourselves. So I just have to tell you, I'm so glad that, one mistake doesn't mean I've missed out on God's plan for the rest of my life. I mean, aren't you glad about that? When I disobey God, when I make stupid decisions and they result in, more pain and more grief and more stress and more problems and pressure and hassles than God really wanted me to go through about this and maybe was necessary, but God's saying, look, I'll work with this. I'll work with you. Some of you have had some real headaches and stresses and difficulties in your life, but God can bring good out of anything we give him. anything we dedicate to Him, anything we hand Him, God can make good come out of. And I could stand up, and I'm not going to do this, but I could read letters and tell you about counseling appointments filled with disappointment. People who thought they found the love of their life, and then telling me, just, David, you know, the disappointment and the frustration and the anger and even disgust, you know. And it is amazing to see how something can start so wonderfully and then turn so badly. A lady from another church doesn't go to Hillside, but you know, was talking to me a couple weeks ago and said, you know what, I'm a Christian, my husband's a Christian, but things are so bad, I find myself thinking about other people. And I wonder how the marriage would be if I was married to that person. I wonder how the marriage would be if I was married to that person. And she just says, you know, it just would probably be better. Some of you are old enough to remember the wedding of Princess Di. Remember Princess Di? I mean, you talk about the most picturesque fairy tale, you know, wedding of all. And then to see how that turned out. You know, to have a wedding start out that dramatic, I mean, and then see the tragedy. Not just talking about her death, but even the tragedy prior to that. Talk about a fairy tale wedding, but ended in a horror story. Sadly, many marriages start this way. They start off in harmony, then they move to hostility, and then if time goes by, it just moves to apathy. And we're going to talk about that. In love, and you know, everything's great, everything's going wonderful, time goes by, the fighting starts, and then if you know everything doesn't explode, and everybody goes their separate ways, there's just this apathy that sets in, this you know, who cares, you know? You do your thing, I'll do mine. And what causes something that begins so wonderfully to turn out so badly in the end? You know, how does Mr. Right become Mr. Wrong? So clearly, it seems. Is there anything you can do about it? Having counseled many people, probably hundreds, I haven't kept track, but hundreds of people over the years, I've concluded that marriages go south, marriages sour and fall apart for basically four reasons. Four categories of reasons, I should really say. And we've got to understand what causes marriages to go wrong and go stagnant first. So I'm going to start this, you know, kind of give us the bad news, and then we're going to move into some good stuff. But this will not only help you in understanding marriages, it also helps in understanding friendships, other family dynamics as well. And the first thing that really sinks a marriage is unrealistic expectations. Unrealistic expectations. There's no area in life, I don't think, where we have higher and more unrealistic expectations than in marriage. Hollywood sets us up for this, I think, to a certain extent. You know, it's the knight in shining armor coming on the white horse and capturing away, you know, the damsel in distress, and you know, and then they ride off into the sunset. I hate to tell you, nobody's coming, ladies, nobody's coming on a white horse in shiny armor. If you ride off into the sunset, it's probably full of smog anyway. So the truth of it is, right? Pop your balloon, right? It's not going to happen. The covers of romance novels don't really happen. But they sell us on that, you know. I mean, think about it. It's not just Hollywood. It's the whole dating process that sets us up, you know. People do weird, strange things when they're dating. I mean, think about it. Think about all over the world. Men are walking into bars, going up to a complete stranger, and offering to buy them stuff. Can I buy you a drink, right? When do people do that? I mean, do we walk into Sears? Hey, can I buy you a toaster? You know, hey, I'll put a washing machine. We don't do that. But it's like we act so crazy. It's just, you know, it's bizarre. Some of you men say things that you would never usually utter ever. Like, you want to go to the symphony? Right? Right? Huh? All right, now I probably would, because I do. Well, yeah, that's a whole different other problem, and, you know. But that whole thing sets that we do weird, strange stuff, weird behavior. And then, you guys ever seen Brides magazines? You're having all girls at the house, you know. But you ever seen these Brides magazines? I swear they should have a sticker on the front, labeled, a warning label that says, warning, science fiction. I'm telling you. I mean, you leave this, everybody's airbrushed, just perfect. Everybody looks absolutely flawless. And I'll tell you, as a pastor, I have seen some absolute extravaganza weddings. over the years, and it's amazing. By the way, single guys, okay, make note. You really aren't an important part of the wedding at all, actually. The star of the wedding is the bride. The co-star is the bride's mother. And the rest are all supporting cast, all right? So, yes, show up. That's really important. But really, you know, yeah, it's just incidental. You know, they had the whole thing, the best man. Don't even think of, you're not even in the lineup. You know, they got to go through a lot of women and a lot of great family to get to you. So, and I've learned that, you know, that's just the way it is. Well, then, they take a bride, then they hibernate her for 3 days. You know, and they're doing everything they possibly can, and you know, 3 days later they come out, and she's a goddess, you know. And this person's walking down the aisle, and everybody's looking, and they're thinking, she is never going to look that good ever again, you know. I mean, right? So, that's mean, huh? Is that mean? Okay. All right, I'm just kidding. But you know what they do? But here's the thing. This is why. Just to make sure that the bride looks spectacular, what they do is the bride gets a bunch of girls to dress in the dorkiest looking dresses they can possibly find with absolutely outlandish colors, right? When else would you wear a big poofy thing on your shoulders, right? Some of you are saying, wait, my bridesmaids' dresses were pretty. But you know what I'm talking about, right? Have you ever heard a bridesmaid say, I'm so glad I got this. I can wear this out later on to something else. Probably doesn't happen. It's all to make the bride look better. That's why she strategically. Well, and then, see how set up we are? Then there's the honeymoon. So what we do is we plan to go someplace that nobody can afford, right? And it's all picture perfect, and there's no, you know, mosquitoes or sunburn or diarrhea or anything. I mean, right? It's just all perfect, and that's the way the brochure says it. Here's this couple sitting on the beach all by themselves just having this wonderful time. And I mean, it's a huge setup. So you fast forward the whole tape, 6 months, and what do you got? You know, they're sitting around the breakfast table. You know, the guy's in a T-shirt and, you know, stubble growth beard, and she's got curlers on. They both got morning mouth, and they're, you know, arguing over how they can't get the budget to be met. And what was romantic dinners, now there's milk on the counter spoiling. It's like the whole picture comes to a screeching halt. Instead of this virile, young, freshly showered young man at the front door with flowers, it's replaced by, you know, dirty underwear in the corner. What happened? Right? Reality hits. It's terrible, you know, and you're looking at each other going, what happened? It wasn't even that long ago. And I think back on, 21 years this month, and I think, wow, that was so fast. And you look back and see, what happened? Some of you ladies, hey, I thought I married Brad Pitt instead of married a prune pit. You know, I mean, that's, you know, great. What happened? You know, he's going, well, I thought I married, you know, Raquel. I find out I married Roseanne. I mean, what happened here? There's something, you know, disconnected. So, but you know what? And I'm having some fun because expectations, right? I mean, all of us, maybe not quite to those dramatic extents. All right, I'll give you that. But, you know, isn't it true, you know, that we have those images in our mind of how things are going to be, and sincerely, how we really want them to be. And then we get married and we realize, wow, that didn't work out quite that way. Another thing that's really important that really I see happening all the time is unexpected differences. Unaccepted differences. We not only don't recognize it, but we don't accept them. And I don't know if you can see that, but I thought somebody, one of you, sent me this in an email. You know, it has man on top, you know, one switch. Women on, you know, knobs and switches and all kinds. So anyway, you know, the truth is, we've heard it said, opposites attract. Well, and that's true. But after marriage, you can see that opposites attack. What used to fascinate you now frustrates you and irritates you. And isn't it interesting how God wired us in such a way that we naturally seek out people that compliment us? I think it's interesting. You know, people who are very reserved, you know, getting together with people who are really outgoing. Before marriage, everybody tends, to overestimate. I think they overestimate how much they have in common and underestimate what they don't. I have people say this to me, oh, Pastor, you know, girls are like, oh, we have so much in common. And it's like I go, no, you don't. First of all, you're a woman, he's a man. It's like, that is light years difference. You know, the whole thing, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. No, we are from different galaxies, my friends, right? So have you ever felt like this? We just don't think alike. And so they're saying, oh, you know, we have so much in common. But we've done it here. Isn't it funny how morning people will marry night people, you know? Larks will marry, you know, owls. Daring and impulsive people will marry, you know, cautious and reserved people. And those of you, some of you love to talk, some of you really quiet. And isn't it funny how you get these together? Some of you love to spend, you probably married a tightwad, right? Of course, they don't say that. They'd say, you know, good stewardship and so forth. But maybe one of you loves to cuddle, the other one is like a porcupine. And, you know, and then, you know, we've got one who's really neat and organized and always on time. And then the other one is flexible. And mellow and not so much on time. Or just downright late, you know. Heard about the guy who said, you know, I knew I was marrying Mrs. Wright, I just didn't know her first name was Always. You know, so. But on a serious, important stuff here. Yeah. Oh, some of you guys are going to use that, yeah. Here's the thing. Did you know if you're married, if you're sitting here married, I want you to know something really important. God's number one tool in your spiritual growth, if you're married, is your spouse. If you say, wait, what about the Bible and prayer? Yes, of course, but I'm saying on this planet, when you're talking about people who are going to help you and really be a God's tool to help you grow spiritually, it's going to be your spouse. And let me say this, it doesn't matter if they're a believer or not. They don't have to, they may not even believe her. You say they're an atheist, God will still use them. And I've seen that the greater sometimes your differences, I hope this is encouraging to some of you, sometimes the greater your differences, the more potential for spiritual power in your marriage. God kind of creates this equilibrium. There's this balance. And I don't worry about marriages as much when the two are very different. Husband and wife are a lot of differences. I have more of a concern when they're a lot alike. Think about if they have the same kinds of struggles, same kinds of temptations, same kind of depression, same kind of struggle maybe with anger, same that kind of thing, then it can be even worse. It's kind of like I heard a pastor once say, you know, sometimes God was having a bad day and sometimes Moses was having a bad day. And if they ever had a bad day on the same day, you know, the children of Israel would have been wiped out, you know. And you read through the Old Testament, Moses, you know, especially them traveling around the wilderness, Moses said, God, don't kill him, don't kill him. All right, I won't kill him. Then other days, Moses going, God, go ahead and kill him, you know. And sometimes that's the way it is with parenting, you know, with marriage. And so this is very, very important. Also, people get bored with each other if they're the same. So if you have a lot of differences, celebrate that. Your potential for great strength and power is tremendous. You know what would be great? And I didn't say this with the first one, but you might write down alongside these, you know, what was an unexpected, you know, what was a something you didn't expect, number one? What was a thing that you could write that alongside? That might be something, you know, you could laugh at. What are also some differences that, you know, that you've come to find out to learn? And the third thing I want to see is unresolved issues. These are things that come up over and over and don't ever get resolved. Maybe you don't want to talk about it. Maybe it's too personal. Maybe it might be finances. It might be in-laws, it might be kids or something else. But unresolved issues move a marriage from harmony to hostility and then to apathy. The worst unresolved issues, this is important, the worst unresolved issues aren't the ones you created in your marriage. Those aren't the worst. The worst ones are the ones you brought into your marriage. And some of you are saying, yeah, but you haven't seen my marriage. You should see some of the issues. It's from the things you learn from your family. It's things that you learn, patterns, habits, ways of doing things, conflict resolution, that kind of thing. And you both come into marriage, my wife and I, we both came into marriage, you know, thinking, this is the way a family works and this is the right way. The only problem is that she came in thinking, this is the way family works and this is the right way. And all of us carry baggage into our marriage. All of us have hurts, habits, hang-ups, from our previous family into marriage. And the more pain you had growing up in your family, the more baggage you're going to carry in. I tell people in premarital counseling, I said, you are not marrying this person from this point on. You're marrying all, 25 years of it or 30 years of it or whatever, however long they've been on the planet. You're marrying the whole thing. And I've seen this really cause some tension. You say, a spouse comes to me and says, but I didn't cause this. I didn't do this. It's like, doesn't matter. It's part of their life. And that's important to recognize that. Really, marriage, and listen to the whole thing. Marriage doesn't create problems. It just reveals them. Some of you say, well, I was single, I didn't have any problems, then I got married, and boom, all these problems. You had those problems. It's just that you weren't in a setting where anybody was close and intimate enough with you to be able to really discover and reveal them. If you had stayed single, you say, hey, you would still had those same problems, those same issues, maybe stubbornness or selfishness or whatever, but you would have been, single and living by yourself, so you perhaps would never have discovered that. So realize that. Marriage doesn't create problems. I mean, there's problems that come up, but it really reveals them. If you're married, then you let somebody into your life. And when we have really, really close friends, this can also happen. It's like you get closer and closer, you look back and think, wow, how come we're fighting like this? Or how come, I'm not getting my way in this friendship or whatever? It seems like they're so selfish. The truth of it is, you guys have gotten to know each other well enough, see, where that's revealing that. And so what happens is we get married and we say, wow, they've got these weaknesses. I'm close to them enough, intimate with them enough. I know these weaknesses that they have. So I think what I'll do is I'll see, because I think I can help. I'm going to start this little improvement program for your life called Let's Change You. And the only problem is that the other spouse is thinking the same thing, and they think, I've got this great program called Let's Change You, and that's when, the problems start. So we brought flaws into our marriage. We brought more flaws into our marriage than we realized, and that's why you and your spouse overreact to certain things. Ever had those kind of discussions or fights or whatever you want to call them where it's like, wow, he turned this little thing into such a big deal? Or man, it was just all I said was, and she went through the roof. Why? Probably wasn't just that isolated instance. It was probably not only things building up, but also stuff in the past, stuff that had happened, even stuff from family in the past. And you bring up past problems into the present. Let me just say this. If you're a single person, before you consider getting married, delve into some of these issues that are unresolved. Perhaps you're in a situation where you are basically by yourself and you think, wow, they really aren't bothering anybody. Sure, I know they're an issue, but it's really not a problem. They are affecting your relationships more than you think. And so it's good to examine that. So you don't want to carry that guilt and that grief and those grudges into a marriage. If you do, you're setting yourself up for failure. So maybe write down one issue that's still unresolved that maybe you'd like to be able to discuss or talk about. The fourth area that sinks marriages is unforgiven hurts. Unforgiven hurts. I got news for us. We're going to be hurt in life. And the person with the greatest potential to hurt you is the person you love the most. That's why forgiveness has to be a, daily doses of forgiveness all the way around. Marriage needs massive doses of forgiveness. If you hold on to your hurts in marriage and don't forgive, those are going to fester and get worse and worse and worse. What's the worst sin in marriage? I know what some of you are thinking. It's not that. It's unforgiveness. You say, what? Then you think, what? It's got to be adultery. Do you know why unforgiveness is the worst sin in marriage? Because it holds every other sin captive. See, it doesn't matter what it is. Every other sin is hung on to and kept in that relationship. So you've been forgiven by God, and God expects us to forgive others. When you hold on to that hurt, you perpetuate that pain. If you're holding on to a grudge or using it, something from the past, And sometimes we do this, we hang on to something so that we can have it for ammunition later. So when our spouse says, wow, look what you did, I can pull this out of my pocket and I can say, yeah, but look what you did, see? And it kind of balances everything out a little bit, right? Because we know if we get attacked or we do something, we've always got this thing that we can pull out and kind of throw on the table, you know. But you know what? I've never found a couple or I've never found an individual who's hung on to something like that and felt a real sense of freedom. And that will sink a marriage. I'm begging you. I just beg you. Forgive. Forgive. Let it go. Nothing can destroy marriage faster than forgiveness, or unforgiveness, I should say. So write down that hurt you need to let go of, or if it's something painful, you might just put initials or put something that'll remind you. But you can probably think of it almost instantly. What goes wrong in a marriage? Unrealistic expectations, unaccepted differences, that unresolved issues, and unforgiven mistakes. And some of you are saying, David, 4 points. You just described my marriage. There it is. That seems pretty hopeless, except when you look at Romans 4:17. This is where we'll really launch into some things, because this is so great. We talked about Jesus conquering the grave. God raises the dead to life and creates new things. If God can raise a person to life, I think he can raise a marriage to life, can't he? I think he can raise your finances. I think he can raise relationships. He can raise your relationship with your kids if that's gone astray. I'll tell you, he can do that. It's gotten old, it's gotten stale, you know, he can give it new life. So, now I know I'm really going to sound like a guy with all daughters, but have you ever seen a makeover? They have some makeover shows, don't they? You know, where they take a person and they, you know, maybe it's just kind of an ordinary person or maybe a person not attractive at all, and they usher them off and they, what do? They cut the hair and color it and they put the right clothes on and put the right makeup on and they're tweaking this person there, and out walks this stunning person, and you think, oh, wow, it's kind of amazing, right? You've got these specialists. Well, what's the key to a good makeover? It's basically knowing what to do with what you've got, right? So what we're going to do is today is we're going to take this, and we're going to apply this to marriage. You can't work with something you don't have, so we're going to talk about how to have a marriage makeover. Sorry, guys. It's like some of you are going, oh, David, you just, you know, you're killing us here. But I want you to follow through with this because there are 6 steps. I added one by the between the email and now because I said 5 in my email, I think. But steps to getting a marriage makeover. So you're saying, I'm ready to ditch this whole thing. Seems pretty hopeless. All 4 of those I've got. You know, it really just doesn't seem any possibility at all. Now, these aren't easy steps. I can't give it to you easy. I can give it to you specifically, but I can't give it to you easy. They're tough, but they will work. Number one, the very first thing, we're going to go A, B, C, D, E, right down the alphabet all the way to F. The first one, accept responsibility for my part. That's number one I have to do. Accept responsibility for my part. I can't control my spouse's actions and attitudes. You couldn't force them to fall in love with you. You can't force them to stay in love with you. But you do have control over your response. That you can control. The only way you can change them is by first changing yourself and you change the equation. See? Right now you have your spouse and you, the way you're acting or reacting right now. You change the way you act and you react. Now the equation changes. You see? Now they're responding to somebody with different attitudes, different actions. And so that's the way. You can't force them or, you know, take responsibility for themselves. The only way you can change them is by changing yourself, and that changes that situation. Galatians 6:5 simply says, each person must be responsible for himself. There it is. So start on you, not them, and accept responsibility for your part. So what does that mean? You say, okay, take responsibility. What does that mean? First of all, what it means is stop having a pity party. Stop comparing your spouse, stop comparing your marriage. Oh, if only my marriage was like them, if only I was married to that person, and so forth. You know why I said it's a wasting of energy. Stop blaming your spouse for your lack of happiness. You're as happy as you choose to be. It's nobody else's fault. It's your choice. It's like God. We are as close to God as we want to be. God's not going anywhere. Somebody says, you know, oh, you know, if you're not close to God, guess who moved? God's not moving. God's with us. God's not going anywhere. But our relationship with him is as close as we choose to be. That's why when Jesus would heal, remember he'd say sometimes, according to your faith, it'll be done. Why? Not because he didn't have the power, but he wants us to release ourselves, our will, surrender to him. So when you stop fantasizing what might have been. Stop thinking about, you know, I listened to a married couple were talking. They were talking about how, you know, this wife started thinking about a relationship she had before her present husband. And the temptation with all of that, you know. You can't improve your marriage if you're always daydreaming and denying and defending. It just doesn't ever work. So remember, I said it last week, I think, the grass isn't greener on the other side. The grass isn't greener on this side. The grass is greener where you water it, right? I had somebody say, when I said that, somebody says, yeah, our grass should be green. You should see all the fertilizer around our house. You know, they weren't meaning literally, but so there you go. But you know what? Where you water it, what you invest in, that's what's going to make the difference. Can I also say something? Because I hear this, I've had people come in and say, you know what, and you've heard this, we just weren't compatible. It was incompatibility. We've heard people say this. That is a complete and total myth. There is no such thing. I'm not making this up. You look at psychologists. I even heard Dr. Dean Adele say that about 2 weeks ago, say, there's no incompatibility. He's not a Christian or whatever. But Dr. Paul Tournier, the Swiss psychiatrist who wrote Understanding Each Other, said this, very famous psychiatrist, said, so-called incompatibility is a myth invented by judges in order to make a plea for divorce. It's like a common excuse for people to hide their failings. Misunderstandings and mistakes can be corrected if there is a willingness to do so. See, you know what incompatibility really is? In my experience with counseling with people, incompatibility is immaturity. It's basically, I'm stubborn, you're stubborn. I'm selfish, you're selfish. I'm, you know, immature, you're immature, so let's call it incompatibility. And it does sound a lot better, doesn't it? Than saying, well, I'm just completely selfish and I want my way. I think that's, you know. Dr. Paul Poneo, director of the Institute of Family Relationships, has written a dozen books on marriage. And he says, I don't believe in compatibility. I don't believe it exists. Almost any two people are compatible if they try to be. Let me give you a suggestion. Tackle one problem at a time. Don't try everything at once. You know, I think that's part of our tendency is we want to walk in and say, okay, from this point on, we're going to have this absolutely flawless, perfect marriage. It's been terrible, or we've had all these tensions, and now we're going to fix everything. And don't try to solve everything at once. Focus. In fact, you know what I would suggest? Take an easy one. Take the easiest one and solve it. Say, well, we've got this thing about the toothpaste. Okay, there's an easy one. All right? Do we roll it? Do we squish it up? You know, what do? We just squeak in the middle. Okay, let's just solve that one. Okay, toilet paper, over or under, right? So yeah, that's, is that right? Oh, that's a big one. Okay, so wait till later on that. But you know what my point is? My point is, do some that are easy and put some wins under your belt. Say, look, we're working together. You know, let's make some compromises. Let's make some decisions that we can make and walk away feeling good about. So anyway, and then you move to those big things. You move to those things that are really life-changing and dramatic. Most of the fights and arguments and stuff that we married people get into aren't that really that important anyway, are they? I mean, right? You know, I mean, you go home and you say to your wife or your husband, say, when was the last time we fought over something really important? Right? You might be able to come up with something with the kids or something, or something with finances or something, but anyway, you accept responsibility for your marriage. Letter B, believe God can change your marriage. Believe God can change it. Some of you are feeling a sense of deep hurt or disappointment or apathy, or even with all this talk about marriage, that there really is no hope for your marriage. You're thinking, man, why did I even come? Just realize this. Regardless of how you feel, God has not given up on your marriage. He has not given up on it, okay? God can do what we can't do. Look at this next verse right there. It says, Matthew 6, 19, 26. humanly speaking, Jesus said, it is impossible. But with God, everything is possible. God can do what we can't. So let's be brutally honest. When I said a minute ago, I just said God hasn't given up on your marriage. Some of you are thinking, I wish he would. I wish he would give up on it. I mean, if God would give up on marriage, that would give me the freedom to go ahead and give up on it myself, see? I mean, you say, oh, great, David, thanks a lot. As soon as you said, God hasn't given up my marriage, it's like the prison door is just clang shut, you know. It's like, great, now I'm stuck with this the rest of my life. But let me tell you something. Neither I, more importantly, God doesn't say this to make you miserable. God doesn't say, I'm going to work with your marriage. I'm going to help you in your marriage. I'm going to give you strength in your marriage. He doesn't say that so that you'll feel tortured. He knows the potential. You say, yeah, but you don't know. You don't realize how miserable I am. If you can take misery and turn it into joy and fulfillment, I mean, that's a miracle, right? And that's what God is able to do. If he can raise the dead, he can raise your marriage. He does have your best interest at heart. Please, I know people sometimes have a perception that God's just some kind of cosmic killjoy that just wants to wreck your fun. And when he says he hates divorce because he sees the hurt that it causes. Again, he doesn't say he hates divorce people. He hates that hurt. I mean, you know what? Just ask people who have been through it. Ask the kids who have been through it, who've watched their parents go through it. So we just have to try, and that's what I'm trying to help us with, is looking at it from God's perspective, not just human perspective. How can we do what we cannot do? You know, God can resurrect a dead marriage, a dead love life, dead finances, dead communication. So it begins with believing that he can do it. And then, let her see, commit to do whatever it takes. Have you heard somebody say, boy, they got a great marriage. They sure are lucky. Yeah, that luck had nothing to do with it. When you see a great marriage, it didn't come out of luck. In fact, we did this a couple of weeks ago. Remember when I said I had all of you that were married different lengths of time? And I said, you know, how many of you had problems in those 30 years, 40 years? But, you know, absolutely. All of us do, of course. But when you see a great marriage, it didn't come out of luck. It came from a lot of effort. Great marriages don't happen. If your marriage is going to be better and get better and be great, it's going to take effort. It's going to take humility. It's going to take honesty. It's going to take unselfishness. It's going to take the willingness to admit when you're wrong. And frankly, it's going to take time. It's just going to take time. Somebody recently asked me, they said, you know, my wife, you know, because of the situation, doesn't trust me. How can I build that trust? And the truth of it is, I gave suggestions, but it's like I said, but you can't do this fast. Trust can't be built fast. It's just over time. And I wish it could be, but it can't. Galatians 6:9 says, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. And what's the harvest in this situation? I think it's like this old couple walking hand in hand after all those years, still loving each other and caring for each other. And if your relationship's in trouble, struggling right now, it didn't get there overnight. I had somebody call me, this is probably goes back a year ago, somebody called me, my marriage fell apart last night, you know, because they actually weren't at home. And I go, no, it didn't. They go, yeah, I stayed in a motel last night. I said, yeah, but it didn't fall apart last night. You've been working on it for a while, right? And that's the truth of it. Took a lot of time. It's going to take some time to get it back. People say, you know, I'm in this relationship. It's not working out. It's all bad. And I just want to get out of it and get a different relationship, but everything, you know, would be better. Not realizing that if you take you out of, you know, this relationship and you put you back into a new relationship, there is this common denominator that caused problems before, and that is you, right? So there's another, if there was some way to start a new relationship without you in it, probably that would work out fine. But wherever you are, there you are, right? So that's the problem, because we're the part of the problem. So once we own that, once we begin to really commit to that, you know, once we own that, we can begin to work on the relationship we're in right now. So don't give up. Don't give up. It'll cost you to have a great marriage, but let me tell you, it'll cost you even more to go through the pain of a divorce. Just ask anyone who's gone through it. It's and by the way, It's completely normal if you're sitting there thinking, but I don't feel like it. That's completely normal. You say, where am I going to get the emotional energy to commit to this, you know, this kind of effort? There's two places, and I don't want to be trite, but you know, that's an important part of prayer. Just praying. You know, instead of complaining to everybody about how, you know, your spouse makes you sick or, you know, you're frustrated or you're one out, just praying and then obey God. Remember I mentioned this, and I've mentioned this in a lot of contexts, but you can't feel your way into an action. But you can act your way into a feeling. And I've had times in my life when I have not wanted to obey God, but I just did, and then he, you know, rewarded me and said, okay, now I'm going to give you this sense of peace because you obeyed me. I've done it the other way, too, where I've said, I don't feel like obeying God, and I did it, and then it all turned bad. So feelings always follow action. So just doing what you know and just leaning upon him, that's the fourth step. This is important, too, and you probably gathered this already, but letter D is deal with some unresolved hurt. Now, I told the single people, I said, hey, if you've got some unresolved issues, handle those before you get married, and you're thinking, great, already in it, now what do I do? You get some help for those, okay? Now, how do you deal with unresolved hurt? You do it by doing two things, asking for forgiveness and offering forgiveness, okay? Look what James 5:16 says. So admit your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you will be healed. Ask forgiveness. Here's a practical example. Suppose you're married to an unbeliever, and out of desperation and of love for them and legitimate concern, perhaps about accepting Christ, you have been pretty pushy. You know, leaving tracks in the toilet seat, tricky things you're trying to do, right? Just trying to manipulate or whatever. But here's the deal. So maybe they're not a believer yet, and you've been just a little too pushy. Coming to them and say, you know what? I love you. And I guess I'm so desperate for you to, you know, invite the Lord in your life. I've just been pushy, and I hope you'll forgive me for that. You know, now, those are difficult words. You say, wait a minute, I'm a Christian. I'm supposed to witness to people. But you know, there are ways we can do this. And you know, some of you, maybe you had an argument on the way to church this morning. You're going, why are you talking about this right now? Of all the things that I would love to hear about, maybe God's comfort and strength. But why this? Being able to be willing to say, I was wrong. Admitting it. Those words, heal, say, forgive me, those words are so powerful. And just being able to, but then being also on the other side, offering it. Colossians 3:13 says this, bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. Okay, that's all you have to do. You don't have to go any farther than that, okay? So there's your guideline. It's a pretty piece of cake. So you just think, how much did the Lord forgive me? Just remember, i.e., everything, you know, all of your sins from past, present, future. Okay, that's all you have to forgive anybody else. Okay? I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, people. You're like, wow, that's not heavy. This is important. Because you know why? Some of you have been hurt deeply. And some of you are sitting there with things, maybe your spouse, maybe somebody else in your family, maybe somebody at work, and you say, I can't forgive that. The only thing God asks is for us to remember how much he's forgiven us and use that as a point of reference. Have you ever gone on a trip and you had a wonderful time with your spouse? I mean, you have a great time. It's just like, you know, a second honeymoon. You come back. And you come back in, there's a stack of mail there, and then the kids and everything starts clicking in, and real life hits you, and then you start arguing again. Just you can be in the door 10 minutes, and kaboom already. What? Real life. It's relentless, right? We're in this stubborn real life again, and sometimes we say cruel things. Sometimes we say stupid things to each other, don't we? And forgiveness has to be a daily decision in a relationship. If you've decided I'm not going to forgive them, you will destroy your marriage. They'll destroy you, but you'll also destroy your marriage. So you need their forgiveness, and they need yours every single day. Letter E. I really want to get through this. Enlist support from other people. Our culture You'll find plenty of people who will be against your marriage. You can find plenty of people at work or in your neighborhood. If you ask their opinion, they'll say, ditch the bum. You know, your happiness is more important than this. You'll find all kinds of people who will give you that kind of advice, all right? So find people that will support and strengthen you and give you the godly counsel and advice that you really need, okay? So that's important. Find somebody who's mature in Christ. Find a couple who's, you know, been married for a number of years and had a successful marriage. Nobody's got a perfect marriage, but a marriage that's endured through time. And maybe a wise friend or even a Christian counselor, a marriage mentor or something like that. Let me tell you as a side note, if you ever have marriage problems, the worst people to go to when your marriage is in trouble is your parents. And I'm being serious about this, all right? The reason is because you're their little boy. Or you're their little girl. Doesn't matter that you're 40 years old, okay? And so if you want comfort, go to your parents. If you want advice, you may have to seek somebody else out. That's just a little side note. I've seen parents who would have given any other couple absolutely wonderful, biblical, foundational advice, and then when it's their child, it's like they're hurting for them so much that sometimes it's not the best advice. So now, young people, if you're not married yet, all right, they're great ones to go to because they can see it. They've got the perspective. So that's, there you go. Proverbs 24:3. It says, it takes wisdom to have a good family, and it takes understanding to make it strong. I love this also in Proverbs 19:20. Get all the advice and instruction you can and be wise the rest of your life. The point is, don't go it alone. Don't go it alone. Find that support. Find that encouragement. I know I have been tough on you today. I could tell by some of you going, man, hit me again. You know, I know this is tough. Some of this is really hard stuff. But I want Hillside to be full of healthy, strong, growing, fulfilling marriages. I really do. God does too. Some of you would say, I'd love for my marriage to work. I'm just too tired of trying. You know, I've just kind of hit the wall too many times. I'm out of energy. I feel powerless. Good. If that's where you're at, then you've admitted that you're powerless. That's kind of a step to recovery. Be able to say, I need God. And if you come in to your relationship saying, that's it, I'm spent, I need God in this, I can see great success for you. Letter F, the last one here, is, I'm sorry, I wish we had more time because I don't want this to be hurried through. Focus on trusting Jesus. Focus on trusting Jesus. You've got to get him at the center of your life and marriage. The easiest thing to do in life is to lose your focus. I'm not just talking about marriage, I'm talking about life, you know. I love what Jonathan said during worship. Isn't that true? Sometimes we get going in life during the week, and man, how important this is for us to gather on Sunday because, man, we lose our focus sometimes. And we really need to keep our eyes on Christ, whether you're single, married, young person, you know, retired, wherever you are. Hebrews 12:2 reminds us, we must focus on Jesus, the source and goal of our faith. I said it last week, and it's not some, you know, cute little statement, but you really need three in your marriage. God is right there. So it's a husband and a wife and God right there. Hey, God never meant for you to go through marriage alone. Very first marriage, remember, back with Adam and Eve. God is right there. He walked with them in the garden. Now, wouldn't that be cool? But God is there. God is just as real. He is just as here. And your marriage, in a sense, maybe sometimes you two need to sit down and take a walk in the garden. My wife and I don't do that enough. You know, just walk. Think of walking with God together and just talking. Talking with each other, talking with him. So putting Christ at the very center. My advice is whether you're in harmony or whether you're in hostility or whether you've just said, whatever. You know, that's I call that an emotional divorce. I know plenty of people live in that way. The Bible says this, Philippians 2:13, for God is working in you, giving you the desire to obey him and the power to do what pleases him. You may need some counseling. You may need to read some books on marriage, whatever. But what we really all need, is Christ at the center of our life. If Jesus is in you, think about this. Jesus is in you, and you're striving to make him the center of your life. Jesus is in your spouse, and they're trying to make him the center of their life. Jesus gets along with Jesus. I could probably in 20, you know, almost 21 years now of marriage or even our relationship, Cindy's and my relationship, I could say, when we have big fights, I can say one of us at least, if not both, are not putting Christ first in our life. Whether it's just selfish, I want my own way, or whatever it is, it's not trying to be overly simplistic, but focusing on Christ. Christ in our life makes a big difference, and it makes a big difference in our marriage, you know. And again, I want to give you one more scripture, because some of you are saying, I just don't have the heart for it. I just don't have the energy for it. I don't have the spiritual, you know, strength to just go through this. And God says, that's okay, Ezekiel 11:19. I will give them a single purpose. He's talking about his family, but he says, and put a new spirit in them. I will remove their stubborn hearts and give them obedient hearts. You, just like Christ makes you a new creation, when you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, let me tell you, he'll give you a new heart. If you feel like it's hardened up, you feel like I just don't have what it takes, that's all right. God will give that to you. He loves to do that. Some of you are thinking, I married the wrong person at the wrong time. What should I do? God says, hang in there. You made a vow. Let me do a miracle makeover in your marriage, in your relationship. I'll change you. I'll change your partner, and I'll give you a marriage you've always dreamed of. Takes time. I know none of you are going to come back next week and go, guess what? It works. Now, I have had people, I remember one gal came to me, this is literally like 3 years later, said, thank you for my new husband. Same guy. Just applying over time, making Christ the center. It's awesome. Let's bow.